Michelle.
Hi, baby doll.
Girl, we have got so much to talk about.
I know. We always have so much to talk about.
We have our special guest today, too, which is going to be so much fun. Graham Norton
Legend.
Is on the show today, mm-hmm. and I just love him. So smart, so funny.
Yeah.
Everything. He's everything.
Yeah.
Now, but before we do that, I want to talk about this story that was in this. It ran the sort of press circuit, or what do you call that? It's the
viral.
The viral circuit,
yeah.
And I do mean viral.
Well, I have an antibiotic for that.
Well, there was this story about some paper called the Hollywood Inquisitor or something.
Okay,
said that RuPaul claims that Donald Trump had touched me inappropriately.
Uh-huh.
First of all, I've never met him before.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that they would do this, it was
an obvious parody.
It was
wasn't
an obvious parody.
Yeah.
People took it seriously though. But
oh,
if people
stop
looked
it.
At the paper, they go, "Oh, okay, I get it."
Really?
But it was the same as that Illuminati story from last year or a year and a half ago, where people were saying that the RuPaul's Drag Race was luring young children into the Illuminati.
But I don't even know what the Illuminati is.
Well, I think you do, but you're just not saying, because you're obviously a member.
You sound like them. I don't know what it means. I'm going to look it up.
Well, it's a secret society.
I know my kids know and they tell me, but I don't really understand it. Is it real?
It's probably not real because most people cannot keep secrets, but it's a secret society apparently that is actually running things, that are actually making decisions within our lives, and it's like the Freemasons or something,
right? But Freemasons were real.
They're real,
yeah.
But the Illuminati, you know, is some mystical storyline. Anyway, they said that we were luring people into this Illuminati.
Yeah. Drag races.
It's a funny story. But the whole paper, I've posted it several times. The whole site for that one is a parody, if you look closely. But this day and age, people don't get irony. They don't get jokes. They don't get innuendo. It's a scary, scary
time. You know why, though? You know why I think that is?
Why?
Let me tell you. Well, first of all, this world is overly PC. We've talked about this a million times.
Right.
That has ruined everything. You can't say fuck all anymore without being raked over the coals.
Right.
It used to be, how the fuck, I'm sorry, my language is getting a little out of hand. How the hell do you think Don Rickles would have fared in this society?
Right, right.
Joan Rivers even, the way she was.
Well, that's the thing is that because of social media, you aren't able, when you're reading a tweet, you aren't able to get nuance in a tweet, especially if you read it at face value.
Or the most important part of all of this is what I set out to say, and then Don Rickles entered my head, inflection. When you're missing inflection, like I wish Twitter had, and it still may be coming, where we can record stuff and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen where I can go, oh my God, and that'll be played as my tweet. There's going to be an audio option the same way there's going to be a video option. That will change the game because inflection and intention are everything.
Yeah, they are.
And
they really are.
You can't see it or hear it. And that's what the problem is. And the overly PC bullshit, which really ruins, especially somebody like me and you, which you aren't so much in public because of the ramifications. But we are very irreverent in the sense of our sense of humor.
Yeah.
And we have to watch everything that we say.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the backlash.
Absolutely. You really do. But, you know, intent is so important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you read a joke, a lot of times, if you don't get the intention, or if you have an agenda to sort of turn someone into an enemy, or turn someone into an agent of your own to support your own victimhood,
right?
It's very easy to do,
right?
You know.
So, I agree.
Anyway, I wasn't.
It was a joke.
But this thing made the rounds where
it was all
it said,
over. I saw it everywhere.
Donald Trump had where I said that Donald Trump had touched me inappropriately.
My favorite. I mean, it was my favorite. Yeah, I'm actually texting you two really funny, really inappropriate memes and jokes for you to look at. But my point is, you know, normally, obviously, I didn't have to say anything, but we're on a podcast and I wanted to share with people that this is the way now we have to do things.
Right.
We have to do them stealthily. And that's not fair. Because of somebody's sensitivity to a certain thing, we're not allowed to be crazy and not crazy, but we're not allowed to have our brand of off-brand sense of humor.
But listen, on the other side of that argument, there are people who aren't coming from a good place, who could use the exact same words that we use, and their intention behind it is 100%, malicious.
100%.
So that's why it really kills it for everybody, because there are people who, you know, and we've even on social media, when young people, we're talking 11 years old to 17 years old, will use some of our terminology without knowing the backstory, without earning the backstory.
Right.
We'll try to use it, and it's out of context. It's, yes, technically they're using the same vernacular, but they haven't earned the right to use it yet.
I understand. There's a lot of that actually going on where you don't get to say that.
Not just because of your age, but because you really don't understand the rhythm, the power of those words. When someone like you or I would say it, it's because we're coming from a place of irony, which you can't explain it to anyone.
Yes, but even irony, sarcasm, even something simple as children cursing, like when I talked about this on the podcast, but discussing cursing with my child and teaching, she wanted to curse, but she was using it willy-nilly. And I was like, you don't get to do that. Right. It doesn't make sense that way. It has to have a passion and a reason and a thought behind it. You can't just throw it out there, because then you sound ridiculous and offensive.
Right. Yes.
It's like saying, you know, when we were saying, I think on RuPaul's Drag Race, one of the seasons, I forgot. Oh, I know what it was. I think it was when Fifi was doing Frock the Vote season 4, and she was trying to be a staunch Republican white woman, and she was doing these racist jokes. And I said to her, it has to be funny in order for that to land, because if it ain't funny, it's just racist.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's you don't get to just use stuff because you can.
Right. There's a saying,
just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
And that's true. And what happened with you and your viral thing was hilarious, but people took it as literal.
Right. Yeah, I actually had to explain to people, this actually didn't happen. Actually, on Twitter, I wrote parody. I wrote, this is a parody site.
You did. People. When you tweeted it, you did.
Yeah. Because we live in an age now where things can be,
misinterpreted. And it happens all of the time, every single day.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part.
Is that new? You doing a day? Is that a new thing for you?
I'm just getting more emphatic. Is it? I think I always do it.
You've been doing it today.
Have I?
Yeah. Yes. A day.
Maybe it's just a new phase of my life. I'm creating a new, like my word lich.
Yeah. Exactly.
For literally.
Yeah. For literally, you're now saying
lich. Because I was in London for so long, and they don't say literally. We say literally, like the Kardashians would say, like literally. They say literally.
Literally. Like, lich.
Rob Lowe in Parks and Rec used to say literally all the time, right? Uh-huh. And it's literally. And I got so sick of saying literally that I just started going, it's lich. Uh-huh. Everything.
Oh, I love that lich.
It's so much easier.
Lich?
Yeah, it's lich everything.
Uh-huh.
So that's where lich came from. Because it doesn't work in saying it's lits.
Right.
They say lit in writing, you can write lits.
Yeah.
But lits just sounds weird when you say it, so it's lich.
Well, you know, Judge Judy does this thing. She'll go, that would be a big, fat, a new.
Oh, good. I stole it from Judge Judy.
She does that.
Yeah.
A big, a fat, a new.
Thanks, the judge. Judy. I stole it from you. Consider it stolen.
Now, what's this thing I heard about you helping some kid get a place to live?
You know, this got turned into some big thing, but at the end of the day, I feel like this is what anybody would have done. So there was this kid named Jake who tweeted, I think he just got a Twitter account to tweet me and say that he just came out to his parents and they threw him out, and he posted the screenshot of the text, which was, please, mom, may I come home? I love you so much. I told you before, I told you again, you're not coming home with this faggot shit. We didn't raise you to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way God wanted it. No, you can't come home. And Jake said, please, I love you. I just want, like, it broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed. So he said to me, this is what just happened. Can you just tell me it's going to get better? And I automatically went into mother mode, because this is a kid who's now out on the streets. I said, I promise you it gets better, but where are you? How old are you? You know, and he told me he was just turned 18 and he was in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, you know, a small town in Kentucky, mm-hmm. nowhere to go, no relatives because they all feel the same way. And all I did was tweet anybody in this area with any information on shelters, you know, help this kid. Kid was thrown out. Please help me. Urgent. And I knew that I don't have that many followers, 290,000 or whatever, but I knew in there we've got lots of love for these kids, lots of love for the community. And I was just doing my job as a mother and an ally to help this kid make sure he was safe because I didn't want him there and he wasn't allowed to be there anyway, but didn't want him on the street. Mm-hmm. So floods of tweets came, people offering to pick him up because he was in Elizabethtown, not close enough to Louisville mm-hmm. or any other city in Kentucky that could help. Then there were some people there, people offering job, food, shelter, games,
wow.
blankets, whatever. He ended up going to his friend's house and I've been in contact with him and he was going to go home and talk to his mother over the weekend. And he confided in me that not only is he gay, but he's trans. So he said, I don't know how to come out to my mother. You know, my mother knows me as her daughter and I don't know how to tell her that I'm also trans. And I said, I think you should do one thing at a time.
Yeah.
I think we should just deal with the gay thing right now and the trans thing will come later. I'm not saying to live a lie. I just say one thing at a time because I don't even know if you're safe to be in your house with your mother at this
right,
point.
Right, right, right.
So when he went to meet with his mom, he brought a friend and he said that he spoke with his mom and things are much better. She's going to let him move back home. But he's still not completely sure because she's still not happy, but he feels like they at least are on a speaking basis and they can go from there. And I just told him to stay in touch with me and if he needs anything to, you know, let me know and I'll help in any way that I can. But, you know, again, I'm not there. I would help if I was there more. So all I did was tweet it and it got picked up and it wasn't meant to be about that.
Right.
It was meant to be about anybody would do this. And thank you so much for your help. And because of this help, this kid saw that he was loved. He's like, I can't, if I read you the tweets, he's like, I can't believe people care about me like that and they don't even know me.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you how much and how strong and how resilient and amazing our community is when we pull together for this kid, you know, that nobody knew.
Yeah.
It's like you say all the time, you can't choose your family, but being in our community, you do get to choose your family.
Well, there's a long tradition of people helping. It's like the Underground Railroad, you know, and there've been many, Harriet Tubmans throughout, you know, my lifetime, older people who have said, oh, listen, come over here. Oh, you know,
are you saying I'm Michelle Tubman?
You're Michelle Tubman. Exactly. Yeah. Michelle Harriet Tubman.
That's me. My Aunt Harriet will be so proud. Yeah. But for me, I didn't want it to be about me. And I don't like that it got turned around to be about me. And this, I'm some hero. I'm just being a human.
Yeah.
Forget about the ally and the mother. I'm just being a human. And when another human hurts and you could help, I wish I could help all the humans. I wish I could help all the animals. I'm only one person. So if somebody asks for my help, I'm going to do the best that I can do to make sure that kid's safe. If I was there, maybe I would have gone and gotten her myself.
Well, you know, what's interesting too is I wonder how many people have this story to tell.
Yeah.
So many people go through this and so many people survive.
Yes.
You've ever heard the stories of, you know, children who have been abused, who have been taken out of their households, and once they're taken out, all they cry and scream because they want to go back home.
100%.
And it's an interesting thing in us humans, even if it's
Stockholm syndrome.
It's like Stockholm syndrome, but it's, you know, even if it's a terrible storyline or if it's a place where you're not wanted, you know, because you don't know anything else, you want to just go back home.
Which is what I was trying to make clear to him. Is that this might not be the safest place for you back at home.
Right.
If your mother's that angry and calling you a faggot, this is not the right place for you.
Right.
So he brought a friend with him when he went home and he talked to her. And I don't know. I know the outcome was good, but I want him to stay in touch with me because in the end, if they think conversion therapy or some shit's going to happen, and that's what I said. I said, you're actually trans. So it's a step further than just being gay.
Right.
So you haven't even approached that yet. And when that comes, I fear for him.
Yeah.
So I told him to make sure he stays in touch. I can get him help with a therapist, clinics around there. There's people that want to help him.
Right.
You just have to want to get the help.
Well, we talked about this earlier about earning your place. You know, it's one thing to go in and intervene on someone. But it's a whole other thing for that person to actually want it, and you have to ask for the help.
Yes.
I've said this before. There are angels around you at all times.
Yes.
But because you have free will, they will not intervene unless you say, I need help.
Yes.
Boom, it's done. And that's what happened with this kid.
That's what happened with Jake. He asked for help, and maybe I was his angel at that particular moment, but then everybody else swooped in as the angel company, and they all helped and wanted to help and are still asking me what's going on. So the update is he's doing great, you know, as far as he's back home, he's not on the streets. He's, you know, with his mother, and I don't know if great's the word, but he's existing right now, and he's not being abused for it.
Oh my goodness. Oh my, I'm just thinking now, are all the kids around the world going to tweet you to say, I need a place to,
and if they do,
you're like the Mother Teresa of the gay trans young outreach program.
And if that's the case, then so be it. Then that's my calling. And for me, I'm a pay it forward type of gal. And if that's what I'm supposed to do, like, I would love nothing more to get a degree in social working and help these kids see what's going on. Because the thing is, they're all blaming themselves. That's the complete pattern of all these kids that ask for my help. They're all saying, I wish I wasn't like this. I hate that I'm like this. I hate this. What did I do wrong? I'm so bad. I'm a terrible person. Like, when he came out as trans to me, the first thing he said was, I feel so stupid for saying this. Stupid what? This is your truth. It's not stupid. It's beautiful that you know who you are and who you're meant to be. So it's the opposite of stupid. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the rest of society is not comfortable with the word trans and the trans movement yet. And the rest of society are the people that need to get over it, because not only is it real, but it's here to stay.
Well, I think I think a lot of people would say they're comfortable with it, but when it's your own kid and you have your own agenda of what you want this kid to be, it changes everything.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
You better believe it. I have a daughter who's queer, you know, in between and questioning and doesn't know what she is. And you would think, but even people like with me, you know, I'll wave my P flag high and proud, you know, but even with having a mother like me, she's so unsure and insecure of who she is. So I think there's struggles with kids in general, in knowing who they are in general, heterosexual, cis, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And then throwing this on top of it, thinking or knowing that they've been born into the wrong body is even another thing. But you're correct. If my kid came to me as trans, we deal with it. It's a different story than somebody who's not been involved in the community, has no idea what trans is, grew up with nothing but the Bible, and then they say they love all people and they say that they're Christian, but then once their kid comes out as homosexual or trans, then you got a whole different mission.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different game. It's very interesting to watch unfold.
Oh my God. Our culture, we really are very primitive. We're really a primitive culture.
When
we got smartphones and I got a microwave, but the truth is, when the electrical grid goes out,
we're dumb as dirt.
We are dumb and as primitive as dirt. And that we allow fear to rule our lives. I grew up, honestly, I'm born in 1960. I grew up in the 60s and 70s thinking that love would conquer all. But as I've lived this life, I realize that most people believe in fear. They react to fear more than they react to love.
I'm one of them. It is the way we're raised and how we see the world. Fear moves me and motivates me more than love does.
Really?
And it shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
But it's the way that I was raised, and being a city kid, and my mother put the fear of God in me very early to operate out of a place of fear.
Can you change that? Can you imagine yourself operating from a place of love? What would it take for you to be motivated by love?
I don't know, but I would love nothing more because I have the biggest heart in the world. And I think there's a lot of people out there like me who think like that. My whole mind, my whole MO is love. But when something scares me to death is what pushes me. Like if I'm getting overweight and something happens to me physically, I am operating out of fear. Instead of loving myself the whole time and feeding my body right and doing the right thing, I'm killing my body with bad food, junk food, not working out. And then when something goes wrong and I end up in the doctor's, that's when I operate out of fear because I'm going to die, or
right,
fear because I won't get a job, or fear because I won't have the next gig. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, that's what motivates me. As I grow older, I'm definitely more choosing to operate from a place of love. I have to do it consciously, Rue.
Well, it takes a huge leap of faith to believe in love, especially since this world doesn't really support that.
No.
You know, on the popular culture, media, everything is out of fear. It's like especially with television commercials that say you're not really clean unless you're zestfully clean, mm-hmm. or you, you know, coming up at five, is your carpet killing you?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that those messages are everywhere.
But everywhere. Like saying everywhere is not enough.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, everywhere.
Yeah.
And even in religion.
Everywhere.
You know, so,
you're going to die if you don't believe in God because yes. the devil's going to kill you. Everywhere. It's lich everywhere.
Lich everywhere.
But at the end of the day, there are some things with validity in fear. There are some things like, you know, you don't put your finger in the flame because you are going to get burned.
Right.
There is some validity to fear, but operating your whole life out of a power base of fear is not good. And I think I know you've come a way long way with it, and I've come a super long way with not basing my life on fear. But you just hit the nail on the head by saying it's a big leap of faith. You're just going for something that you can't see or touch, mm-hmm. whereas fear keeps you planted and you won't go anywhere.
Right.
And you lich won't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
For better or for worse. You ain't moving.
You ain't going nowhere.
You stuck.
Yeah. You might as well be in Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
Uh-huh. Looking.
Looking.
Looking for love. So I'm hoping that with that message, I don't think the world's going to come tweeting me and asking me. I think they're going to realize there's help out there.
Yeah.
That's the big picture. It's not, oh, Michelle Visage can help me. The big picture is there's a community that loves me and there's help everywhere I turn. These kids that are on the street, at least there's shelters for them to go. They don't have to be on the street.
So, yeah.
There are places for them to go. There are people that want to help them.
Yeah. Here in LA, it's the Jeff Griffith. I always get Griffith and Griffin. I always get those
Griffith.
Mixed. It's the Jeff Griffith Youth Center, Gay Center. And I know they house a lot of kids there. And they, because the old days, I'm sure it's still today, you know, people in Jake's situation just hightail it onto a bus and go to a major city and then
right.
become homeless in the major city. But at least there is support there and they could find a shelter and a support system that could help
them. There's support in Kentucky too. Louisville's got a big gay hub.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of, you know, and I think Louisville's like an hour away from where Jake is. So, and there's help in Elizabethtown because people were tweeting me saying that there's a shelter here and, you know, I can get him a job here. Mm-hmm. And at 18, it's pretty scary if you've been living under your mom's wing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's scary to just take the leap. I lived under my mom's wing, but at 17, I was ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, and some kids just aren't.
So even for Jake, had Jake Googled Elizabethtown Youth Services or Gay and Lesbian Youth Services, something would have come up for
him. I think so. I think it was more so that his mother made him bring the car back. So he had nothing. He was just sitting on the streets. And I think it was more to do with the fact that he needed to know that there was love out there,
right.
that people did love him. That's what I felt, because when he saw it all come flooding in, he couldn't believe it,
yeah.
like could not believe it. And it was a beautiful moment to see, yes, see, you are loved, baby. You are
yeah.
loved.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that things work out with his mom. If I had the balls and the wherewithal, I asked for Jake's number. Jake wouldn't give me his number, and if I had the wherewithal, I would have called the mother. But I'm not a therapist. I don't have a degree in psychology.
But a lot of those things need to work themselves out.
You know, they do. That's why I didn't get involved.
We talked about earning your place in not just our culture as humans on this planet, but even in the gay community. It's yes, you're born how you are, and that's who you are.
Yeah.
But in this life, you have to earn your place. I know this doesn't sound right as I'm saying.
Well,
it.
Let me say it, and I'll translate it.
Okay. What it means is, you've got to fight for everything in this world. Nothing is given to you.
Yes.
You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. But the truth is, life ain't fair.
No.
It ain't fair, and it's not just because you're here. You get a trophy, you have to friggin' work for it.
Yes. Everything that you work for, it's exactly what we're talking about with bread of shame, and anything that's given to you doesn't last.
Bread of shame, right,
yeah.
The Kabbalah thing.
The Kabbalah thing, it's all the same thing, because think of, people look back and say, well, why can't I be born into the Hiltons? Why can't I? Because you're not.
Right.
So that's less than 1% of the population that are born into that kind of money and whatever, elitism. So we do have to fight for every single thing we get. Now, when we say fight, we don't mean go on the street and beat somebody up.
Right.
We mean fighting for our right to just be. And yeah. it ain't easy.
and fighting your own inner saboteur, your own limited perception of yourself.
Because you are so much greater than you give yourself credit for. Me, you, Rue, Jake, and all the kids out there. And there is help wherever you want to go. A lot of kids don't know how much help there really is in every city. And if you're listening right now somehow and you don't have access to, you know, computers or whatever, your phone's on about to die of battery, you can go to your local library. They have computers. You can use the computers for free. That's where you can go and Google. Go ahead and Google, you know, your youth services, clinics. There's therapists you can talk to there. They're everywhere. I think almost every city has at least a clinic.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an important point because all these kids have phones. Everybody's got the information highway.
But yes.
Everybody needs a curator to say, oh, you know what? Go there, 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 and there. See this movie, that movie, and this movie. First, you want to you want an introduction to country music? Okay, start with Dolly Parton's. You know,
I am included in that. Yeah. I love a curator.
Yeah,
I've always said to you, listen, I want to do the work. I just got to get my foot in the door. Yeah. My foot in the door is that curator. Everybody's waiting for it. And sometimes it's necessary to push you to the next step. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the next step, you go, oh shit. My curator's gone. Now I got to do this on my own.
Right, right.
So sometimes, and I believe it, at some point in everybody's life, whether they've been abandoned, whatever the situation is, there's always going to be that curator at some point in their life.
Right.
Even if it's just in passing, it's going to be so important. And then you get it.
Yeah.
Or maybe you don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the help is out there. And I don't want the credit for that. What I want to do is give the people on Twitter who were there for Jake, as well as I was, the credit and the blessing that Jake is going to be okay in Jake's journey. And I hope that when he does come out and transition to his mom, that it's a safe place. And I think that should wait a while because I want it to be the right temperature.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If I had a kid and they told me, you know, that they were Republican, you know, I would be disappointed initially, you know, or even if this is the thing about having kids, you never know what you're going to get, do you? What if you get a real a-hole, a real, sociopath who has no regard for anyone else and you're stuck with this creep.
And it's possible. And a lot of people instantaneously want to blame the parents when the reality is sometimes you just born that way, son.
Right.
You are just born that way. And yes, there are medications. Yes, there's ways to eat. Yes, there's behavioral therapies you can do and that person can be changed. But sometimes you are just born that way.
As a Republican?
Yeah, as a Republican, as a crazy Republican. Uh-huh. But at the end of the day, kids don't ask to be born. You don't have any control over who they are once they come out. I mean, their personalities. You can control what they eat. You can control their behavior and what hours they come in and out of the house and their homework. Mm. But at the end of the day, you can't control who they are. All these kids need, for the most part, is love and guidance.
And water.
Of course, food and shelter.
Yeah.
But love and guidance. They don't want you. Like, my kid is gay. Or I'm going to say that's a stupid example because I'll accept my kid no matter what. But a parent who is, let's say, very Christian and conservative, and this happens a lot, and the kid comes out as gay, the parent doesn't have to like or approve of that child's lifestyle. All that child needs is acceptance and say, child, I don't approve of it.
Right.
I don't like that you're homosexual, but I accept it because I accept you and I love you for who you are. Because you can't change who you love. It is what it is. You can be beat inside of you. It's still not going to change the way that you feel. And then you live in repression and then all bad things happen.
Right.
You know, it's not the healthy way to be. So if parents can just learn to love their children no matter what, the world would be a better place. Again, you don't have to approve.
Right. Son, just don't wear the assless chaps around the house. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a middle of the road there that can be met if.
Yeah, well, lederhosen.
That's a good compromise.
Yeah, good compromise.
Lederhosen is a great compromise. I love it. But yeah, we've got work to do that needs to be done.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back. Michelle, I was just in New York and I used my Today Ticks app.
Yes.
I loved it.
Did it not change your life?
It couldn't be easier.
Yes.
It could not be easier. Now, for those of you who don't know what this is, Today Ticks is the easiest way to buy last minute Broadway and theater tickets at the best price. crisis. Michelle turned me on to it.
Yeah.
You can discover over 80 musicals, comedies, dramas, and that's just in New York alone.
It's everything. It's not just Broadway. You can use it in London. You can use it in San Francisco, here in LA, New York.
DC, yes. Chicago, Philadelphia.
New York City's coming.
Yes, yep. Yes. It couldn't have been easier. Now, TodayTix pioneered mobile lotteries and mobile rush technology.
Yes.
You can enter these lotteries to see what shows at deep, deep discounts are in the city you're in at any moment.
And what you do is basically, I mean, we have stuff that we're going to read here, but I'm going to say it just for one. So what happens is you get on the app, you put your credit card info in, you see the show, you can pick where, like they say, they have balcony, they have dress circle, wherever it is, you pick the ticket you want. You don't know the seat you get till you get there, so it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. You know the section, just not the seat. And then when you go there and they tell you to meet half
the
an hour before the show.
Right out in front of the theater for you. They've got a red jacket on that says TodayTix on the back of their jacket. And I said, I'm who I am.
Yeah.
And they gave me the tickets. It was so easy. And I got to tell you, a few months ago, I did not use TodayTix.
Yep.
And I went through one of the other retail. It was so confusing.
Yep.
I ended up not even getting the tickets because it was crazy.
Too much mishigas.
Too much mishigas.
I'm telling you, they are revolutionizing ticket buying. And I know it's just for theater now, but you never know. They are everything. TodayTix. Today, T-I-X.
And Michelle, we've got a special offer too.
Yes! TodayTix, we talk about it all the time. If you'd like to take advantage of it, download the app. And the offer code is $20 off your first purchase with RU. So go ahead, $20 off your first purchase of tickets. That's a steal! Put in the offer code RU, TodayTix.
I just heard also that they're launching a branded podcast with theater people called Broadway Backstory, which is coming out November 15th. They tell the story of how a Broadway show went from just an idea to a full on production.
I love it. So download the TodayTix app for free. You could do it on iOS, iPhones, and all that, and Android. That's Today, T-I-X, or visit TodayTix.com to see what's playing this week and treat yourself to a show. Do it now. Offer code RU gets you $20 off.
We were just talking about the Republicans. I honestly don't care.
I mean, obviously that was a joke.
It was an obvious joke. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat.
No.
It's all pretty much the same if you ask me today.
Politics are politics. They're all full of shit.
Yeah. I would never want to run for public office.
You could not pay me enough.
Because first of all, I don't want to try to convince people of something they don't already believe.
Right.
And most people are really, really not smart. And the thing about politicians is that I wouldn't want to sit in some committee to try to listen to all of that. I got shit to do with my life.
You have negative energy. It, being a politician, just think about all the negativity that is bombarded at you day in and day out.
And do you know that a great portion of the time you're in office is spent soliciting funds for your next campaign?
Ew.
Do you know how much money is spent? You have to cold call people to ask them for donations for your cause.
Unbelievable.
You know, when Marianne Williamson was running for Congress here in Los Angeles, I spoke with her and I said, you know, you're doing more good and making more change in people's lives as a spiritual interpreter and as a interpreter of the
Course in Miracles.
And that sort of change in people from the inside out rather than the outside in is way more effective. She did not win her seat, but I'm actually secretly happy that she's continued her work on an emotional human level.
I have never experienced anything as disgusting and rabid as this presidential campaign.
Right. Yeah, I can't wait for it to be over. I'm sure it's by the time this airs, it will be over. But
it's so
rotten. But that's where we are today.
Oh,
that's where we are today.
It's an embarrassment.
It is.
It is not what this country was founded on.
No.
It is so gross. We look like a joke to
Would
the rest
you ever
of the world.
Run for public office?
Are you insane?
Yes, I am insane.
I am
answer
way
the question,
too,
madam.
No, I'm way too liberal. People would not.
Well, you're too emotional because a lot of times, but you're also a parent, a lot of times choices have to be made that are unpopular and that are seemingly cruel, you know? But a lot of times the truth is absolutely cruel. Sometimes it's cruel to be kind.
Yeah. In the right places.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't think I can do it. I don't think I have. I'm pretty tough. maybe I would have the skin to do it. I just don't know if I'd want to do it. I feel like right. I can do more good in the therapist role than I could in a political role.
Yeah, I would not want to deal with the other people. It's like, you know, like for me having kids, I would probably be a good parent, but the hard part was having to be around all the other parents.
What about instead of having a baby, you guys adopting an older kid?
Like you, perhaps?
That would be great. Yeah. I love this really nice 2017 black Corvette. Daddy, can you buy it for me? Okay. Seriously. If you adopted a kid who's like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
A homeless, you know, LGBT kid of her adoption. And that might be a better way to do it instead of for somebody like you. I'm not pushing on you. For gay parents, it would be so great for a gay kid to have a home where it's normal, where he belongs, he or she, where they don't feel like they're being judged. You know what I mean? They're just getting judged for the other things, like clean up your room and things like that, where they can have some sense of normalcy. So that's a thought, and not really having to deal with the other parents either. And that it's usually when you start dealing with the preschool, the kindergartners, the little littles, which are fun. But I have to tell you something, Rue. I never fit in with those moms either. I talk about it in a book, talk about it in life. None of them moms ever liked me or ever welcomed me.
Yeah.
Never. It just went, it put me back to where I was in elementary school when I was being picked on and bullied. Put me right back. I was like, oh my God, you moms don't like me here either. Because I come to school in stilettos and workout pants.
Yeah. Like, what do they have against pedal pushers?
Hello?
Yeah.
Do you not know fashions?
Right.
What is wrong with you people?
And has a tube top ever hurt your feelings?
Has it ever gone out of style?
No.
Thank you.
My goodness.
So that's the point. The point is, no matter where you go, those people are always going to exist. So fuck them anyway. Yeah. Because they ain't paying your bills.
That's right. You know, some of this weekend, I spent some time with Nancy Grace, that Nancy Grace.
No way.
And she said to me, she said, you know, you would make a great parent. I said, you know, I probably would. I just cannot, I couldn't, wouldn't be able to deal with the other parents because they're crazy. Not only are they crazy, but people are,
but baby,
they live out of fear. Yes. Most people live out of fear, and I wouldn't want them, my kids, subjected to that type of thing. Even I remember when I was in grade school and growing up, you know, I saw all the colors and I used all the colors in the crayon box.
Yeah.
But all the other Most of the other kids would give me the blues about it because I somehow threatened their belief system by being such a free spirit and a loving, kind spirit. I was always a loving, kind spirit.
Right.
And that threatened people.
Yes, but what you're talking about, those parents, I barely spent any time with them parents. I got to be honest. That's such, you're talking a finite, little tiny itty bit amount of time that you'd have to deal with
but
them.
It would trigger all of those old feelings from my own childhood.
Yeah, I get it. But that's your issue. You would be a great parent. 100%.
I've said this before. I feel like
you could have the kid out on the ranch.
I feel like all the kids who come through our show are like my children. They're grown. They're ornery.
Would you like mine? You can have mine.
No, not yours, but I'm talking about the drag children that come through the school.
Yes, but I'm offering mine because teenage girls are really, really difficult.
I know very, very much. I grew up with all girls.
Yes, as you know.
My sisters, Renee and Renetta, they ran away from home when they were 15.
And so did you.
Well,
you didn't run away.
Left. I was offered.
I just said you
furlough.
Didn't run away.
I was.
You were offered furlough. Yeah,
I was, actually.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah, well, you were lucky enough to have a sister that could take you in.
Yeah.
You know, if I wanted to go, I had nowhere, and my daughters would have nowhere, too. But but it's an amazing thing. I talked about it with my husband. I said, you know, how would you feel about adopting, you know, a homeless kid, LGBT youth? And he's like, oh, God, we have to go through this again. Like, right. he was seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. But I feel like there is good in it, especially with so many kids that are unwanted by their parents for whatever their reason is, and it's usually because of a sexual proclivity or because they're trans or whatever, that end up going on the streets and selling themselves to make a living and earn, you know, put tricking to, you know, feed themselves. Mm-hmm. There's so many kids out there that are in this system through the state that'll never be wanted back by their parents,
right,
and have nowhere to go if the grandparents are not there anymore, because the grandparents a lot of times step in.
Yeah, but they will find their way. Yes. You know, this,
oh,
first
of
all,
life,
this life, for even if you are in a loving home and family, nothing is guaranteed.
Hell
nothing
no.
Is fair. It is, life is hard.
Yeah.
Let's just start there.
Yep.
Life is hard. And you know, some people have more advantages, but that doesn't mean that there are other elements to life that are that advantages with money and with prestige don't even approach.
Right,
you know,
and money does not buy happiness.
No,
it helps you out.
It does. It's great. It's a great start.
But it doesn't mean you're having a lot of miserable rich people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So anyway, we've got a gorgeous, gorgeous man coming
Speaking
on
Speaking about
show.
Miserable rich people. Just kidding.
No, he's fabulous, lovely. Graham Norton is with us. So we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back with Graham Norton.
Yay.
Hey, getting a great night's sleep is easier and more affordable than you might think.
Okay.
Boll & Branch makes the sheets that make your life lovely.
100% organic cotton.
Yes, and you know what? They're super soft. In fact, they get softer over time.
You spend
so much time in bed.
Mm-hmm.
So much time in bed.
Well, not enough.
Well, not enough time in bed. You've got to treat yourself right. Treat yourself right. Get some Boll & Branch sheets.
And you know that feeling like when you lay down in bed and you're wearing a nightshirt, you're wearing shorts or whatever, even if you're naked,
yeah.
And that feeling of a nice set of sheets when it lays down, they're cool to the touch.
Yeah.
I love that.
Have you ever slept on the flannel sheets?
I have slept on the flannel sheets back when I lived in New York and New Jersey.
Yeah.
Obviously, in California, you don't have as much of a need. It does get chilly over the winter.
Sure.
But now Boll & Branch is, funny you should ask, now doing a new line of flannel sheets. They're sleek. They're organic as well. Uniquely crafted to resist pilling, because that's the problem with flannel.
Yeah.
After you wash it, it gets all pilly and then it gets scratchy, almost sandpaper-like. These are not like that. They're designed thicker and warmer for those cold, cozy months, and they're only available for a limited time.
Yeah, I would get some of those too, because, you know, this is something that you are doing for yourself or
yes.
doing for someone else. You know, this is the season to give gifts. This makes a great gift. So you were talking about the boxes they come in. You save those boxes?
Yeah, they're huge and they're sturdy and they have a ribbon that ties.
Yeah.
And it opens. It's not like what you're thinking of. It's
right.
an actual like hinge box.
Oh, it's such a classy, classy gift.
Yeah.
Listen, kids, shipping is free and you can try them 30 nights. If you don't like them, send them back. But I know you're going to like them. I doubt if you will send these sheets back.
No.
There's no risk and no reason to not give them a try. And all their products come beautifully packaged in their signature boxes, make a great gift. Do this for you. Do this for a gorgeous friend of yours.
Yeah, and they're the first sheet brand that's ever received fair trade certification. So you never have to worry about how or where they were made. And they donate a portion of every sale to charity to help fight human trafficking. So get started right now. Go to BollandBranch.com. Use the promo code RU for $50 off your first set of sheets. BollandBranch.com, $50 off your first set of sheets. That's BollandBranch.com. Promo code, what else?
RU. We are here with our very special guest. Graham Norton is here.
Can you believe it?
It's crazy. How often are you in the US of A?
It's really rare that I come West Coast. I don't think I've been
right.
to the West Coast for about 5 years. I go to New York quite often. I go to
right.
New York probably 2 or 3 times a year.
Because
really?
You live there. You have a place there.
I've got a place there. But mostly it's rented out because I don't go there enough.
Uh-huh.
So, because I only give, because I, you know, I work a lot.
Yes.
So I just get a few days off, and that's why New York's so easy.
Right.
You can just nip there. Whereas LA is a major trek.
Yeah.
It is. It is. And do you, most Brits love LA.
Because mm-hmm, of the
like
weather.
I like the weather. It's the driving. I've rented a car right now.
Uh-huh.
And I know that car is going to sit in the hotel garage. I haven't even got in it because it got delivered to the hotel.
But how do you find driving here? How do you do it?
Well, I haven't done it.
Yeah.
Ever?
No. I remember the first time I got in the car here and I was driving along, people were waving, and I thought, God, I'm more famous here than I thought. And then I realized I was just on the total wrong side of the road.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, that's why they were waving.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
But I have to say, driving in LA, it makes me feel like a good driver. You people are so bad at driving.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Really,
yeah.
Shockingly bad.
Awful.
Yeah.
Well, and the other great thing is, coming from Britain, is here, there's a lane for everything.
Mm.
Doesn't matter what you want to do, like manicure your nails,
yeah.
turn right, turn left,
sure.
check
yeah.
mirrors. There's a lane for that.
That's
well,
true.
Well, all lanes are for manicuring, curing nails, or doing taxes. A lot of people like to do their taxes while they're driving
yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. A lot of fuss about texting.
How yeah.
that, you know,
yeah.
yeah, text.
Yeah. So you're in America, and you only come over here 3 times a year. So you do the Graham Norton show. Do you do other shows in Europe?
I do You're making me sound lazy now, Rue. It's like you're going, do you do something else? No. So busy with?
No, because we're very familiar with the Graham Norton Show because of BBC America.
Correct.
And you've been on it.
And I've been on it. Yeah. But I'm wondering if there are shows that we don't see over here.
Not really. I do a couple of award shows, and then there's a fabulous thing which America must embrace. It's the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
It is the campiest, most hilarious thing in the world. And I do the commentary for the UK audience.
I see.
Which is basically me being a bitch in a commentary booth for about 4 hours and getting a little bit drunk. By not very drunk.
And has a UK song ever won?
Eurovision? We used to win all the time.
And then Katy Price entered.
Oh,
did she really?
Oh, did she ever?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Pregnant in a pink PVC cat suit. It wasn't her finest look.
Sitting on a couch.
What she said?
You want a settee or something?
Oh, it was grim. It was pretty grim.
Okay, so this was several years ago, but did everyone nominate her to be the representative?
Entered a thing, and there was a few people. Now, we don't do that anymore, because we used to leave it open to the British public to decide who was going to do it.
Yeah.
And then we realized we couldn't trust them.
Yes.
So I love that performance. She was awesome.
So now we've realized with the weakness of democracy.
Yeah.
So there's now a benign dictatorship. However, can I just say, the benign dictatorship is doing just as badly as the democracy. We still haven't won the thing.
Really?
But one day we will. Look, Germany have won it. You know, who likes Germany? Nobody. So they won. So there's hope. There's hope for the UK.
And is it voted on like with American Idol, with phone call votes, that the most people who call in get to choose what the winning song is?
It's done country by country. So at the end, there's this incredibly long sequence where they go to, I think, you know, 26, no more, for like 40 countries or something, and they get the votes. So can we have the votes from Switzerland?
Uh-huh.
And they give the votes. And that's, so it's country by country, and it's half a jury vote and half people voting.
Right. Does it seem fixed?
And I think this past year, certainly was skewed.
Was that the Conchita Wurst?
That was two years ago.
That was 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Has Conchita ever been a guest judge on Drag Race?
She has not. She has not.
Oh, because she is... Have you met Conchita?
No.
No, me neither. She's lovely, though.
She's an extraordinary... You know, because she does, you know, fierce drag, she's great. Mind you, now, you disapprove, don't you?
Of
the beard.
No. We've had bearded queens here.
Oh, you embrace the beard.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
It doesn't bother me. I don't mind it. Uh-huh. But she was she was the MC for this kind of cabaret night in Vienna. And she was trying to do, you know, kind of that normal drag queen shtick of, you know, throwing shade and being down, being, you know, sassy. And, you know, being, you know, insult comic kind of to the crowd.
Uh-huh.
And she was just absolutely terrible at it.
Uh-huh.
And so she developed this kind of peace and love persona
about
kind
of necessity,
spreading happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is who she is.
Yeah. Right.
And it works for her. And she's made so much money.
Wow.
In Austria, she's on credit cards. Wow. She's on, you know.
Shut up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
You're missing a trip. Have you been on a credit card yet, Ruth?
I have not been on a credit card.
Go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Chime, boo-boo.
Yeah, that's the next thing.
That's wild.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not some weird bank. It's the main big, you know, Bank of Austria.
Yeah.
Bank credit card.
The Bank Von Trapp.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you do the Eurovision thing. I don't know why that's not a thing here. Well, we have American Idol, which is ending.
Yeah, but Eurovision is so camp. Rue, it is literally like a parade of people performing just for drag queens.
Right.
But no, but then there are really good people in it too.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, like Conchita Wurst, I love that song. Mm-hmm. I love her performance. And also because in that great tradition of drag, it had such an amazing kind of backstory of kind of the pain and the rise like a phoenix.
Mm. Right.
It was so fabulous. It was kind of, you know, I am wearing this.
So she represented Austria.
Yeah.
What does Austria win if she gets this thing?
Well, Austria win the chance to host the competition.
So
basically, no one really wants to win. Everyone wants to come second.
Because then it takes work.
Because if you come second, hey, we did really well. Celebrate. Yeah. But if you win it, you've got to host the thing.
Do you have to?
You can give it away, I suppose. Mm. But it costs millions, millions, millions. So you don't get it till you're there. I never understood until I actually went to Eurovision. It is like the Olympics of song.
Mm-hmm.
Like the press village is acres.
So it's
acres.
Literally like the Olympics.
It is like the Olympics of song. When the first one I did it in Moscow, they had special Eurovision bus lanes painted like pink in the street.
Wow.
So, you know, the Eurovision traffic wouldn't get stuck in all the terrible Moscow traffic.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So, of course, the Graham Norton show we get over here on BBC America. So many A-list guests. Well, how long have you been doing the show? And when did the A-list say, that's the show we're going to do?
It was a really, you know, it's a slow burn.
Yeah.
When we started about 18 years ago.
18?
Wow. Yes. Bless your heart.
Yeah. So old.
So no, just out. So amazingly talented.
It's a long time. And we've moved networks in that time. But we've always kind of kept going. You know, we took breaks in between networks and da da da, but we kept going. And because with publicists and with studios and with stars, the level of trust required is enormous.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll remember this, you know, doing the talk show. Mm-hmm. It's that thing of like, if anything goes wrong, you're back to zero.
Right.
Like, you don't kind of go, well, wait a minute. We've had your clients for 10 years and nothing went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, if one thing goes wrong, that's it. It's like you've never had those 10 years.
Yeah.
You're starting again.
Yeah.
So it's taken us a long time to get to the point where people are happy to put the Tom Cruises, they're happy to put the, you know, the Russell Crowes.
Yes, BMX Bandits, Nicole Kidman has been on your show.
Yes, she has.
Several times.
Only once.
Just the once.
I think Nicole's only been on the once.
Yeah, and you, obviously you don't have a favorite because you're fair, but who are some of your favorite guests? And why? I mean, is it because play along?
Well, there's that, the playing along bit is great. But also, I suppose my favorites are the people who, back in the Channel 4 days, when we didn't have a kind of a track record or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just people I loved who took a punt on us, who kind of went, let's give that show a shot.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, still so grateful to people like Dolly Parton and Cher who came on in the first few years.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they didn't need to do that show. There were safer shows for them to do because back then it was a much more out there show. You know, we showed really quite edgy, close to porn
things
on the internet and everything. So it was a kind of a trickier show for them to do. So personally, I owe those people a big, big debt of gratitude that they took a risk on us.
And they brought the show to a world audience because it was around the Cher Dolly days that we really got a big helping of Graham Norton and knew what the show was, you know. Because those episodes really, we saw those over here.
Well, what's weird now is that we'll have a clip. Because the way shows work now, it's like, you know, it must be the same with Drag Race, where you make a whole show, but actually people are watching 30-second bits.
That's so weird.
So this one moment, suddenly it will get 20 million hits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there was another...
It doesn't translate.
There was another 58 minutes of that show we slaved over.
Yeah. Right.
And so we find that. So like we had, you know, Will Smith did a kind of dancing thing, a kind of reunion of Fresh Prince. And that's had...
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
But it's had about 20 million hits.
Yeah.
We did a stupid thing with Emma Stone punking her about the Spice Girls coming on.
Yes, I remember that.
Again, millions and millions of hits. So kind of what's odd is people in America probably don't know my name, but when they see me, they go, oh, that's that guy.
Right. That's the Spice Girls guy.
Yeah, that's the guy who we saw the clip on GMA or we saw the clip on Entertainment Tonight, where these little viral things go viral.
Yeah. Does making it in this country matter to you?
You know what? No, and not anymore. We tried. We came. We did a season for Comedy Central about, I don't know, it must be 10, 12 years ago. And, you know, I was younger then, had ambition. But now I'm just really grateful to have a career anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, when that didn't work out, you kind of think, okay, I'm a very lucky boy. I have a career in the UK.
Amen.
And the UK is okay. It's London. It's a very nice place to live. It's a nice place to, you know, have a successful career. So, and coming here is fun. I love coming here. And actually working here, I found really exhausting.
Oh. Why?
Because there's so much kind of, I mean, it's different because you guys are in a hit. So you guys get to rule the world and kind of go, no, I'm not doing that. But presumably when it started...
That's funny.
Yeah, that's very funny.
Okay, so it's not like that. Okay, because to me, it was all production by committee. You know, there was like, so many people. No one would own a decision. No one would make a decision.
That's true. That's true.
Because everyone wanted the credit if it went well. Mm-hmm. And no one wanted the blame if it went badly.
And well, that's shitty.
It was just, but you must find that here, no?
We do. Wait, not here. Team, not here. But in other shows and in other places that's, you know, where there's notes from people in departments that you never heard of, you know. But you've been doing your show for over 18 years now. And what, how has it changed? How has the medium of doing a talk show changed? Because over here, they've incorporated a lot of games into the shows where the everyone will stop down and they'll play some type of game.
I.e. like, variety shows.
Exactly. Kind of, yeah. And you really pioneered that thing. You've always had games in there.
We always did it because it seems to me that, you know, look, interviews, people don't really, like, you know, the Barbara Walters one-on-ones, you know, where somebody cries and da-da-da. You know, that's not what I do. That's not what any of us do on these late-night talk shows. So you're not really going to get any, you might get a funny story about somebody, but you're not going to get any real sense of who this person is.
Especially with an audience there.
Yeah.
Because that changes the whole balance of the feeling.
Because they want to be liked.
Yeah.
So they're gonna play for an audience. But when you see how they interact, because we have all our guests on the couch at the same time.
Right.
So when you see how they interact with each other, when you see what makes them laugh, what shocks them, what surprises them, in that, the celebrities reveal.
Uh-huh.
You find out way more about the person than if I ask them, you know,
what kind of tree are you?
Yeah. Kind of, you know, I must write that question down.
No, that's the famous Barbara Walters question. I think she asked Katharine Hepburn, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? That's the most famous Barbara Walters question.
That interview can't have been going well. No. To that question. Like, that must have been
page
17 of questions.
Yes.
And now I find myself asking this.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, you know, I grew up watching the Mike Douglas show, and back then there were only four channels to watch, and I learned so much about pop culture from there. It's the first place I saw Blondie, and on that same panel there's probably Dinah Washington or Sarah Vaughan or Ella Fitzgerald. It was such a mixture of people. Who did you pattern your show after, and who did you emulate?
Well, growing up, because I grew up in Ireland, so we got all sorts of weird television. It was like they would buy Charlie's Angels, but to get Charlie's Angels, they'd package it with kind of like, and by the way, you get like all these old episodes of That Girl.
Oh.
You get all these old episodes of these. So we were watching like the Dick Cavett show.
Ah, he was great.
The sitcom.
No, Dick Cavett. No.
The talk show. Yes.
Was he Canadian? I feel like he was Canadian.
He's American, but he it felt Canadian.
Yeah. He was sexy. It did. He was sexy.
Yes, yeah. His voice.
I watch those clips on YouTube all the time now.
Uh-huh.
And you see all the guests smoking.
Yes.
The women are wearing hats. They've got gloves on. It's just genius.
I love it. The narrator in Rocky Horror Picture.
Well, on Broadway. Yes. He was
he really?
Yes, yeah. On Broadway. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But in Ireland, we had a show called The Late Late Show, which is still the longest running talk show in the world.
Still running today.
Still running. It's got a different host now, but it's still running. But I grew up with a guy, and it's so weird. His name was Gay Byrne.
Oh,
I know.
Hey.
I don't know. It was a different time. Different time, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And I really, when I look back, I can see that he was a huge influence on me. And he was just so at home in front of a camera.
Yeah.
And you know, when you I watch all kind of clips or archive stuff, you imagine it'll all look old fashioned and hokey.
Mm-hmm.
And the show does, and the audience do, because they're wearing ridiculous clothes and da da da. He could be hosting it today.
Wow.
He was just so fluid, and he could go from, you know, a really funny bit. There's a famous episode where there was a competition. You won a car.
Mm.
And you sent in a postcard, and then he phoned you live on the show to say, congratulations, you've won a car. So he phones this woman, congratulations, you've won a car. She goes, thank you. And she goes, hey, did you enter the competition? Yes, I did. you don't sound very excited. Oh, well, we've had some bad news. Oh, what happened? My daughter died today.
Oh.
Wait, how did she die? In a car.
Oh.
And you've just given her well, I guess they needed a new car now.
Yes, but also
a daughter.
But it's one of those things where, like, as a broadcaster, your kind of instinct would be going, well, we're sorry, bye.
Yeah.
And just get it.
Yeah.
He talked to this woman.
Wow.
He talked to this woman. I don't know why. There was a priest on the panel that night.
Wow.
He said something to her. There was a poet. And Gay Byrne knew that this guy had a poem about loss.
Wow.
And, you know, and this is something that, this is a kind of a light entertainment chat show, but it just, he was able to steer that. He was so confident in his show. This is my show, and anything can happen in this world, and it'll be fine because I'm here.
Now, Michelle, you know, is an Anglophile.
Oh, she's here all the time.
I know.
I am. No. You can't get rid of me.
She's like Ebola.
Yeah.
We tried to close the borders.
Only prettier.
Are you any type of a file of a place or a country?
I do love New York. I do love New York.
Yeah.
I love New York. And weirdly, as I get older, I love Ireland again.
Really? You know, where in Ireland are you from?
South Coast. And, you know, when I left, I didn't just leave. Like, I ran away. Yeah. I couldn't wait to get out of there.
What year did you leave?
It would be
1872.
Eight, really? It was a good year. The potatoes had failed.
Yes, again.
Yeah. It was 83. I left.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there was no way. I was never going back.
Did you go straight away to London?
No, actually, I went to San Francisco first.
Oh!
Spent a year in a hippie commune.
Really? You're lying, right? Wow.
Did you plant vegetables?
It was cheap rent. So, I lived in a
hippie
commune.
How'd you find the hippie commune?
Some woman, I'd got a number from someone, a guest lecturer or something at my university in Cork, and she gave me some numbers. And when
wait, you're from Cork?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just watched A Murder She Wrote the other night where it says a killing in Cork.
Yes, because Angela Lansbury has a house in Cork.
I see.
She's not stupid.
Yeah.
She had a tax-deductible holiday.
Yeah. It's called A Killing in Cork, and there's a sequel to it called...
Cork It?
Yeah, Uncorked. Yeah.
Murder She Wrote on Cork.
Yes.
So someone you knew in Cork told you about this San Francisco commune.
Well, or a friend of someone. And so she gave me the number for the commune because they had a little hostel room. I stayed in the hostel room for a few nights and then they had a meeting. Was I allowed to stay? And I was allowed to stay. And
was
I
there lived, an I initiation?
Did you have any brother husbands?
Well, I did. I did. My very first husband was one of those brother
husbands. Was he?
Yes.
Really?
And but he wasn't really gay. That was the weird thing. He just had...
He
had to sleep with everyone who came into the house. It was kind of, and also, I think he had to
prove... Very kind of him.
It was kind of him. He was lovely. I adored him.
Wait a minute. Sleep or sleep?
Oh, sleep.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, we're talking San Francisco.
Yes, in the 80s.
It was struggle, snuggles. And so anyway, I lived there for a year. And it was an amazing, amazing time.
Wow.
And it kind of set me up for the rest of my life. They were just... brilliant, brilliant people. And because you kind of think, oh, I live in a hippie commune. And then you just kind of think, oh, I'll just make fun of them now.
Uh-huh.
And I've never really made fun of them.
Really?
Because I loved them so much.
Wow.
And,
so then why
and they really
leave?
Opened my eyes. I was like, I was an Irish 20-year-old, which is funny, a universal 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I was that kind of conservative of the small C. You know, the way young people can be so kind of like, oh, that's stupid.
Yeah.
So I was that kid. And they really opened my eyes and broadened my mind. And yeah, set me up for the rest
broadened
of my life.
Other things too, didn't
oh,
they?
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why did you leave if it was so rewarding?
Well, because I is this a terrible thing to say?
No.
San Francisco, this is me.
Yeah.
Like 20 years old from Cork.
Yeah.
At the end of a year, I thought San Francisco was quite small.
It is small.
I was kind of like a bit bored now. I feel like I've lived here for a year. That's enough.
Mm. Yeah.
I know that's sacrilegious because people, it's the only place I've ever been where people who live there wear the I Heart
yes.
T-shirts.
Yeah.
Like people actually live in San Francisco where I Heart SF.
Yeah.
And it's like, seriously?
So
So I was out. And that's when I went to London and went to drama school and blah, blah, blah.
Drama school where?
In London Central. Central School of Speech and Drama.
Ah.
You know Dame Judi Dench then, when they're...
Judge Judi Dench.
Yeah.
A little lady.
A little lady I call.
Yeah. Oh, I love San Francisco. This is my favorite American city is San Francisco. And I vow to live there at one point in my life, even if it's just for 6 months. And
that'll
I go up
enough.
There.
That'll do you.
That'll do me. Yeah. I go up there at least twice a year just for a vacation. Usually on my birthday.
It's breathtakingly beautiful.
I love it. You know, last time we were there, we rented a helicopter. No, actually, you go downtown in front of a hotel and you a shuttle takes you down to the airport, which puts you on a helicopter. And the helicopter has only 6 people in it, including the pilot. And you drive over the San Francisco Bridge and then under the San Francisco Bridge.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
Fabulous. And it drops you off in Sausalito, and then a shuttle takes you back into the city.
Sausalito? Oh. Isn't that a cookie?
Yes, it is.
Don't you do you love the dance festival they have there, too.
Yes, there's a hip-hop dance festival. A girl I went to high school with, her name is Micaiah. She does it every year. It's a hip-hop dance festival. And it's not just hip-hop. It's all forms of dance. I don't know why they call it hip-hop, but it's so much fun. I love San Francisco.
Oh, with the hippies, we used to, on a Sunday night, we'd go to Barefoot Boogie.
Where was that?
Oh, in some hall somewhere. And it was literally, people took their shoes off and danced a bit.
It's just interesting element to your life story that you lived in a commune in San Francisco. And I don't know if I would have guessed that about
you. I wouldn't have guessed it.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that about you. That's so
No, because I wasn't drawn. I mean, it's a bit like, I remember, you know, my sister was a vegetarian because she couldn't afford meat. I was a hippie because I couldn't afford rent.
Yeah, right.
I was just an economic hippie.
Default.
Default. But in fact, once you're in it, it's sort of lovely. And the hippie commune is still there. I went back to the 25th anniversary.
Oh my God, they had a reunion?
Yeah, well, it's still a commune. People still live there. Mm. And some of the older ones are now in hippie retirement homes that they've set up.
Serious? You know,
yeah,
because
they're sort of the Grey Panthers. They're still really politicized. They still, you know, want to go on a march. They just want to live in sheltered accommodation.
Lovely. I think so.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
It's great. Well, it's also, you know, where are the old gays going to go? We need to set up some really good gay retirement homes.
That's a good point. You know, that's where, if you want to make some money, that is a place, because like older gay people have money.
And hot Brazilian nurses.
Yes.
Whoa, like the birdcage.
Bed baths. Day and night.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That's an added feature.
And in San Francisco is a good place to do it.
Oh, my goodness. Where would you want to retire? The English go to Spain, don't they?
A lot of them do.
Yeah. But it's just warm. I think New York's a great place to retire.
Right.
There's lots of old people fun there.
But, darling, the winters are brutal.
Well, I wouldn't say that for the winters, obviously. Right.
Obviously, sweetie.
I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy. Never that.
So you love New York.
I really do. Yeah. I think it has great energy. The only thing that put me off it was I brought my dogs once.
Can English people do that?
How do you do that without quarantine?
You do it by, well, because they get pet passports.
Right. Yes, on the way here, but on the way back. Oh, because they're British citizens, they can go back. Well, they don't have rabies
in
the UK.
They're dogs, Michelle. They're not.
Yeah, but citizens. I thought they had to get passports for the dog.
They're citizens of the world.
But you know what I mean? They don't have rabies over there. So you can bring them here.
Yeah.
They have a passport.
But Americans bringing them there, they have to quarantine them for 6 months.
I didn't. Right.
Yeah. Because you're British and your dogs are British.
But my dogs were here. They could have been bitten by a squirrel.
They could have been, but if they originate here.
No, I think there's some sort of, I think you're okay.
I would love that.
They've changed it, you think?
I think you can. Well, certainly I did it, so.
Yeah.
Well, you're
too late now. Right, too late now.
But I saw New York through my dog's eyes.
Oh.
And you suddenly realize how filthy, noisy, alien, and freakish New York is. I now look at New York dogs and I think all these dogs need help.
Yeah.
Because they're so nervous. And you see them, they look over their shoulders.
Right.
They're nervy dogs.
It's like a cry for help.
It is. Even the dog run. I took my dogs to the dog run. I thought, well, at least they'll like the dog run because there's other dogs. And they just literally stood in it and looked at me like, what the hell? Why have you brought us to this? This is the biggest toilet in the world. Like, you can think, like, if humans can smell the amount of dog pee in a dog, imagine how bad that is for a dog.
Oh, my God.
It must be like going into the worst lion cage in the zoo.
Yes.
Just be gagging.
Yes.
But I guess some New York dogs have got used to it, so then I just run around in it. But, I took them off the lead, so, you know, go play.
Yeah.
I sat on a bench, and like needy children, they just came and crawled up on the bench beside me, like, please, can we go home?
We don't want to be here.
Oh my God.
Oh, baby.
Now, I was just in London earlier this year, and you know, over the years, and I've gone there many, many times over the past 25 years, I really love it now. I think it's changed in a way that's made it even more international. It's made more accessible, especially with, you know, portable computers and things, you get to find out what is what. But I'm still baffled as to where to go for food, what the must-see places are. Now, what comes to your mind first? What if I'm going, say, next week, where do you think I should go have dinner? And I'm not that posh. I like food to be simple. I do not believe in waiting on food. Food is, I'm not a foodie, but I do need to eat.
Obviously.
But, yes. So, but I don't like pretentiousness.
No, I'm with you. I mean, sometimes it's nice. Sometimes it's quite nice to have someone put a napkin in your lap.
Yeah.
Sort of, but I do sort of think I'm not disabled. I can probably do that myself.
Yeah.
Are you sure, Graham? Yeah,
some days. Some nights I can't. Some nights I need it tucked into my
head. Yes, darling, we all do.
Somebody needs to chop it up. I agree with you. I think London is fabulous, mm-hmm. but I worry that London is becoming so super expensive mm-hmm. that, you know, when I was a kid and went to London, you know, you didn't need me. Maybe there is a scene still for those kids. Mm-hmm. I feel like there isn't. I feel like those kids have to live so far out.
Right.
They've got to live in, you know.
They're all in Brixton and they're all like in places that are on the fringe.
Brixton's now.
Well, that's up and coming now,
that's not affordable anymore.
Yeah.
It's I really feel like people, the coolness, because what, you know, people want to go to London because it's cool. Mm-hmm. And I feel like those creative cool kids are being priced out. And we're going to end up where, you know, Birmingham or Manchester will become the cool place.
Right.
Because, you know, cool people don't care where they are. They'll so long as they move in a pack, mm-hmm. they're fine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their shortage was, you know, invented by the cool kids, mm-hmm. you know, the designers, the artists, all that sort of stuff. And now, you know, it's full of bankers and millionaires.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Yeah. New York, same way, though. You know, yes. New York has been doing the exact same thing.
Like the Lower East Side isn't a thing anymore.
No.
It's all.
Yeah. I mean, even now, everybody's out in Bushwick.
Brooklyn, yeah. But then Hell's Kitchen used to be like a pit, and now it's all gay.
Yeah.
Like, that's the new gay.
But at least you have a gay. In mm-hmm. London, we don't have a gay.
Well,
anymore.
Soho's not gay anymore?
No, because the bars make, there are still some gay bars in Soho, and that is still one of the gayest places.
Old Compton Street is still pretty gay, but that's it. That's it right there.
Yeah, and then, but so many gay bars are shutting down, and it's really sad.
We'll always have Balance, darling. We'll always have Balance.
Well, they're opening a new one, so
yeah.
But the, like, the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, the RVT.
Yes.
Have you ever, you've never, you're too.
I was just there. The Royal what tavern?
Vauxhall Tavern.
I don't
know.
No,
it wasn't by where you were.
No.
It's the oldest gay bar in Britain, I think.
Oh.
And it's, honestly, it's terrific. It's where, so like, you know, Lily Savage?
Yeah.
Paul O'Grady, Lily Savage? It's where he cut his teeth. I remember back in the late 80s seeing, he used to do a great talent show called Stars of the Future, where he would sit in like a rocking chair at the side of the thing. And if we thought the acts were really terrible, we would clap. Because if you clapped, they had to do the song again. they were drag acts. And there was like one man, he just looked like a bus driver in a wig. And he had like, he borrowed his aunt's caftan. And he would do Turn Around Bright Eyes. And you know, in the middle, like, turn around every now and then. And he would do twirling.
Yeah.
So we would just clap. And
you would just twirl. Just keep doing it.
Oh, like, you went off stage and got sick.
Look, the most beautiful thing about the Royal Vauxhall Tavern that you love. Katie Price's place that I stayed in is right around the corner. Now, I didn't know, she didn't warn me because I don't know if she knows. I pull up in the car, come up. Outside was literally every bear in all of the UK in drag standing outside. So it's all bearded big bears in just little tutu dresses.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful.
Was it one night of week or
is
it
like
every
Sunday?
Night?
Yeah. 5 o'clock, like pub time.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of waste ground. I remember when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, there was a bit of waste ground behind the pub.
Oh, what's that?
Waste ground? Like, which way, you know, just like a bit of open area. No one had built on it. Like
a
building was gone.
An empty lot. Yeah.
And a few times a year, they would have the Royal Vauxhall Tavern Sports Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be like a sport, like an actual sports day, but for drag queens.
Yeah.
So they would do like drag relay races. Uh-huh. And I don't know what else that would do. Most of we drank and then just, you know, made out with strangers.
Drag darts.
Yeah.
And now, it's the Royal Vauxhall
Tavern.
Royal Vauxhall Tavern.
But it's known as the RVT.
RVT.
Which sounds like an STD.
And Well, and what part of town is it in?
In Vauxhall.
It's in Vauxhall.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's south of the river. It's where some of the big clubs are. The big kind of trippy all-nighter clubs where people take lots of drugs and stuff all night.
Okay.
There's one that's right across the street from there. That's another big gay club, though.
Is that Fire or something?
Yeah, one of those Elements or something. It's right there, Vauxhall, and then the club's right around the
They
band.
Scare me. I can't go to those.
Princess Diana went to the Royal...
That's the rumor. The rumor is that Freddie Mercury and Kenny Everett, they had a night, and they were going out to the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, and Diana was with them, and they said, look, you come too. So the story goes, and we don't know because Kenny and Freddie, they're no longer with us.
The dress and rubber.
But they dressed her up as a leather thing.
Uh-huh.
And
mustache and everything,
yeah,
right?
Mustache, yeah. Everything. Da-da-da. And she went and she partied the night in the Royal Vauxhall.
Wow. Vauxhall.
Now, whether that's true or not, I don't care, but I choose to believe it.
Me
now,
too.
Did you ever meet her?
No, never did.
Never did. Have you met the Queen?
Never met the Queen.
What royal members, what members of the royal family, royal members?
Have you ever met Prince Philip?
No, the only ones I've met Prince Andrew and I've met Prince Harry.
Uh-huh.
They're the only ones I met.
Yeah.
And so I was in this club and I went to the toilet and I came out and there was a guy walking towards me and he went, Graham Norton. And I went, hello. And he went, what are you doing here? And you feel like saying, what the fuck do you think I'm doing here?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just been to the toilet. Uh-huh. And then I realized, oh, I recognize that tall ginger kid. That's Prince Harry.
Wow. Really?
He's by himself in a corridor.
Da-da-da. But there were bodyguards around him.
No, not at that point. He was totally by himself.
Wait a minute. I don't believe you.
Yeah. So I went back to my table and I was having dinner with Carrie Fisher. So I stupidly told her that
Debbie Reynolds' daughter.
Princess Leia?
Exactly, Princess Leia. So I told Princess Leia that I'd seen Prince Harry.
Uh-huh.
Well, now she was on a mission. Yeah. Princess Leia had to meet Prince Harry.
Yeah.
So we were in the elevator, up to every floor, getting out. Da, da, da. And I was like thinking, oh, look, we can't find him. Let's just go. So I nearly said Princess Leia. Carrie goes up to some guy who works in the club and kind of goes, oh, we're looking for Prince Harry. And I'm thinking, oh, well, he'll just tell her, I'm so sorry, madam, but I cannot, you know. Oh, no, he's like, oh, come with me. And he led us to where Prince Harry was.
What?
Yeah.
And was he there with the...
No, and then Prince Harry did have minders with him.
Yes.
He was with friends, but he had a few minders. And the guy went up and I said, oh, this is Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. So Princess Leia, Prince Harry... Mm-hmm. You know, Carrie was
royalty.
Very, very excited to meet him. And so she walked off and I just said, look, I'm really sorry about that, you know, because it was my fault that it happened. It was my fault that it happened. And he was very sweet. He went, well, I'm not a Star Wars fan, but a lot of my friends are and they'll be so excited.
Oh,
they'll be so excited that I met Princess Leia.
He seems so sweet, doesn't he?
Well, he's a party animal, isn't he?
But you know what? What an awful life.
I agree. I would hate that.
Pointless life.
Also a tough one, losing your mother so young and then having to grow up under scrutiny.
I feel sorry? Elizabeth, the queen.
Yes. The longest reigning queen in the history of the monarchy.
Yeah. And I feel like, so she was about 7 or 8, old enough to know, because she was never meant to be queen, because her dad was never meant to be king.
Right.
So the brother was supposed to be king, but when he went off with Mrs. Simpson, suddenly daddy came home and he's the king now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And even at 8 years old, you're the eldest daughter, you know, this is it.
Right.
That's my life. My life is screwed. Princess Margaret, she's still having a great old time.
Yeah.
Right.
But Elizabeth is just like, that's it. Rest of my life,
she's screwed.
Over.
Wow.
And, you know, I think that's why she's hanging on for so long, because she doesn't, you know, she wants these people to have lives for as long as they can.
Oh, that's a good point. I never thought of that.
I think she's being a nice granny.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of all the, you've interviewed everyone, you really have. Is there anybody you haven't interviewed that you're dying to interview?
Does it sound awful to say kind of no?
No. No.
I mean, there's some that we haven't had.
Like, yeah.
We've never had Brad and Angelina.
Well, you're going to have them. They're going to come to do your show to promote by their new movie together.
Yes, they are, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
No, because we thought we'd never get George Clooney.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone told us, you will never get George Clooney.
Really?
You will never do a talk show in Britain. We had him.
Wow.
Because we had the guys from Monuments Men on, Bill Murray, Matt Damon, and those people. And they had a great, it was one of my favorite shows. They were
I heard it was fantastic.
They were
great.
They were
love
it. Quite drunky up. Anyway, I'll shut
well,
up.
Listen, you have been just a joy. I just love it so much. I will continue to watch your show. It's so enjoyable. It's like the old shows that I grew up with.
Yes.
You know, the Merv Griffin and the Johnny Carson. It's so perfect. And you're so lovely.
Right back at you, because Drag Race is really just a fabulous, fabulous creation. And it's just, it works on every level. It breaks my heart and fills my heart with joy. It's brilliant.
Aww. Oh, that's sweet. Well, thank you, Graham Norton.
Yay.
Next time, when we come over there, I'm going to have to go to the Royal
Vauxhall.
And I'll dress up as a leather man.
A leather, dear.
Yes.
No, dress up as Princess Diana.
There you go.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? Can't love yourself, how in the hell you gonna love somebody else? Can I get an amen?
And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes.
If you can't love yourself, how in the hell you're gonna love somebody else? Amen.